The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2010 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2010. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the Internet. If you would like to find out more about the work of ACCS, please visit our website at www.accsedu.org. To order additional talks from this conference, please visit the ACCS website and click on Conferences. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
So this is building parent support. This is sort of a second of a two-part thing that I did, but they both stand alone. So if you weren't here yesterday, it shouldn't be a problem at all. Thank you very much. I am going to briefly do like a three-slide summary of yesterday, and then we'll move in to looking at some very concrete details of how our school does things. So I'm going to make a few caveats here like I did yesterday. One is that this is how our school does things, and it isn't likely to be the same for your school because there's vast differences in markets and in the way your families view you and the type of school you are and other things. So take these as examples. As I said yesterday, I have found over the years in these conferences that concrete examples from other schools are one of the more helpful things that I can take away, because while we are different, there's a lot of similarities, and if you can use any of this, it would be helpful. Another thing as we move into this today, I wanted to say is this website and that password. Well, you're going to want, probably, if you see this, when you see the slides, you're going to want to go to this site and download this stuff if you're interested. I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't want to presume that you're going to like it, but if you do, you won't be able to get it off the slides because it's very small, very tiny print. So you can also just go to our website at theambroseschool.org and download and just find your way through into our document library, and it's right one of the first three or four documents there right now. I'll leave it up for about a month, so that's about as long as you'll need to get it. and we'll move into the next one here. I did want to make a clarifying point. I talked to a friend of mine this morning. Yesterday I made a comment about the blessing we have in classical Christian education for so many of us, and I think this is true of both administrators and teachers that work for the love of the vision rather than for the money. I did not mean to imply that we should or that we could, that there's a reason why we should abuse that and take and use people. Obviously, I make a fraction of what I used to make in the business world, and I do that voluntarily, and I love it, and it's worth every penny of it, and I certainly hope any of you that are teachers realize that those of us in administration value you even more, because the classroom is where things happen. It's also unique, at least at my school, that most of the teachers that I employ would be employable outside of education at a much higher rate than we pay as well. So that's just clarification on what I meant by that. Now into this presentation. So here's kind of a synopsis of four top reasons why K-6 parents tend to select private schools. Usually when they come into my office, they're looking for the Christian influence. You know, they want their kids to be around other Christian kids. They like this, you know, a safety aspect, and this depends on what part of the country you're from, but obviously that plays a role. Smaller class sizes. This is, you know, one of those little points of detail that seems to come up over and over and over again when you talk to parents. And then better academics. So then you get into 9-12. You still have the Christian influence desire there, but there's a lot of parents who come in at this level are concerned about distractions that are going on typically at the junior high level and other schools, and you know what those mean. What's that? Oh, okay. Educational options and specialization. This is something we saw in the survey a lot, and we'll look at the surveys a little bit today as well, but the nature of the world in America right now is that have it your way, you know, kind of the marketing slogans about being able to mix and match and take whatever you want to have, and better academics is something they say they want, but a lot of times what parents mean by that is that their kids can get better grades. And they actually are an inverse value, which is kind of interesting. A lot of times I've had parents tell me in my secondary that they're going to transfer their kids out because they, or a particular child out because he needs to feel like he's a success. And what that means to them is he has to get A's instead of B's or C's. And so the definitions here have to be watched carefully. We saw this yesterday. This is our plan for attrition. If you weren't here yesterday, basically the gist of this is you're better off planning for attrition than you are trying to hold on to students at all costs. So just plan for it, put it in the budget, and orient your school towards it. So when we built our new school building, we purposely did not build it large enough to have two classes all the way up through high school, because we knew that if we did that, we'd have to be paying for that square footage. Therefore, we would end up admitting students that we didn't want to admit. So then the conclusion to that from yesterday was we need to find ways of increasing the perceived value of CCE among our core families and within our communities, especially in the secondary. So if you remember from yesterday, if you were here, the concept of value is that if you make the perceived value is what somebody is willing to pay. And it, rather than lowering our tuition, the best thing to do is to create a value pool, a deep value pool with parents so that they like it. It's a pretty intuitive idea, certainly nothing that I invented and certainly nothing that's earth-shattering for any of you. You probably already know that. So today my goal is to give you some real practical ideas on how to do that. One thing I found with classical Christian education is that it is not a quick sell. It is not something you can sit down and, I have tried every form of what we used to call my business elevator pitch. I wondered when I thought of that, how many people have heard the term elevator pitch? Oh, good. I sometimes wonder how much I drag in from the business world that nobody knows what I'm talking about. So anyway, I've tried a dozen different sorts of elevator pitches. I thought of trying to throw one up here, but reality, you're going to have to figure that out on your own. I will give you a few ideas of how to construct one, though. For those who don't know what an elevator pitch is, it's just the old concept of you're trying to, get some product picked up by a company, and you happen to step onto an elevator with that company's CEO, and you've got exactly 5 floors to sell him on it. What's the short story? And that's where we are a lot with parents. We have to give them a story quickly in order to make the best of the opportunity that we have. So we're going to talk mostly about the rhetorical message that we use at our school, and then I'm going to try and move through this fast enough today that I can get some input from you, because I hope I can get some ideas from you guys on things you do as well. One more caveat here. Style and substance. One of the things that I hear a lot among my classical friends on the patio at night is, they're substantial people, and a lot of times marketing isn't the most respected thing in the world because it feels to people like you're trying to, sell snake oil or something. The important thing to remember about marketing that is honorable about marketing is that your style and your substance need to go one hand in hand. And what that means is that obviously your school has to have substance, and it needs to be what you say it is. But as with anything else, you can throw a great school into a concrete bunker and have that be your school building, and the style of your building is influencing the way in which people perceive, even the way your students learn, is driven by the environment that they're in. We're human. We are not machines. We can't be, you can stick a computer server in any old concrete bunker and it'll be just fine. In fact, it'll probably be happier because it's cool. But kids are people, and they need to have the beauty of their surroundings. They need to have the the love of their teachers. So it's a very fully orbed thing. And so don't dismiss style as you're doing this. So now I found this an interesting point out of the survey that I thought some of you might be interested in. One of the things we asked in the survey was to choose a group of thinkers, and most of them current, a few past thinkers in the Christian realm that your parents respect and whom they know and respect. So this is the list, obviously C.S. Lewis. You can ignore the number scale across the bottom. It actually was higher than 80%. I think Lewis was like 92%. But the way the tool worked, it came out this way, and I couldn't control that. But if you just look at the relative recognition, Dobson, obviously, R.C. Sproul, Chuck Colson. So this may help you as you're looking at places to put messages or to people to quote, to help you understand a little bit about who they respect, who they know. This is kind of a bit of an anachronism in the presentation, because I'm not really going to go any further in depth on this. I just wanted to show it to you because I thought it was curious. Now we're going to look a little bit at how we get our message across. And so I want to start out by saying that the thing about classical Christian education, because it is something that's hard to communicate, you really need to have a fully orbed system of communication with your parents. And so some of this stuff, like how your building looks, what you're doing in your classrooms, you think, how is that marketing? Well, effectively, the way your parents see you is driven by what they see everywhere. They aren't just going to walk up and give you a check. They're going to want to come in and see your school, go through a tour, that sort of thing. And so what I'm going to do here is, I think that getting in the secret to parent retention is getting ongoing, consistent, long-term messaging that stays there all the time and is in front of the parents, and they read and they actually engage. I told the joke yesterday, or not really the joke, but the problem I had a week ago when I had Douglas Wilson come speak at our school. He said some things that, you know, I thought, oh, yeah, it's the usual dog and pony show. And then my parents are coming up to me afterwards going, I never heard of the Trivium. This is great. And, you know, so, you know, I was only a few parents. So don't let them dismiss everything here, right? We do a lot to try and get them on board. But you have to tell the same story over and over and over again. And you have to keep it in front of them. And you have to live the story. So I chose this look different as the first thing. When somebody walks into your school, you should look different. I'm going to make reference. I've done that every meeting. I've done that too many times. That bottom panel shows a sign that you see when you come into our facility. It says, take every thought captive to Christ. When parents walk into our facility, from the outside, one thing that happens when you work in a facility is you don't see it anymore, because you walk in the door every day and, you know, it's all invisible. Unless somebody's changed something, put a plant where there wasn't one or something like that, you don't see it. So I'd encourage you, when you go back to your school, to walk in your front door and see try and turn off your brain on what you know is there and look around and say, how would a parent see this? Because it matters. It really does matter. That's their first impression. And one thing that you really have to watch is how are parents perceiving you the very first thing they walk in. Because a first perception is an interesting thing, both with your view book or any marketing materials you send to the parent, with your web page, and with your front entryway. That is one of those three things is going to establish a first perception. Once that, it's like a stake in the ground. Once you've got that stake in the ground, to move it, you've got to do a lot of work. You're going to have to dig it up, and you're going to have to move it and put it somewhere else. So you don't want to put a first impression out there that's inaccurate. One of the reasons I have take every thought captive to Christ, when we built our new facility, it's a tutor structure. It's very attractive. I didn't want parents, we had a Latin, there was slated to be a Latin thing over this threshold on the way in. And when I saw the building, I realized, I kind of put on my parent hat and realized parents were going to perceive that this was a hoity-toity kind of a, I don't know what you call it, prep school or something. And we wanted to speak directly to Christians because they're our core market. So we switched over to this slogan, and it's worked very well because it tells the parents why we're there in a language they can actually understand. The table you see in the upper left-hand corner of this is an example of another example it's another example of how you can show things to your parents. Now, I don't know, some of you may not use the, some call it the Harkness model, some, we don't, we call it just the Socratic method or the Great Conversation. We use a Great Books program at our school, so all of our high school rooms have these tables in them. And there's a little bit of expense in buying the table, but if you look at it as a marketing expense as well, every time I do a tour at our school, the tables catch parents' attention, and they're going, what is that? And then I get to talk to them about how when you're teaching kids how to think, it looks different than when you put them in rows and feed them a bunch of information, right? And so we get to have a conversation right there in the hallway, looking through the glass windows and watching the kids sitting around these tables talking. I talk to them about how tables facilitate the Socratic method, where the teacher asks a question, but students are engaged and building on that question all around the table, and the question bounces around three or four times before it goes back to the teacher. I always talk about how it's a very different environment than when the teacher expresses a position, who was Napoleon, and then the students respond back, he was the leader of, or the military leader of France in this time period. That kind of thing, that kind of back and forth, is very common. Parents expect that. They don't expect you to say, should Napoleon have returned from exile? They don't expect those kinds of questions. So you can go into those discussions with them, and having something physical like a table starts that conversation in a real way, and it anchors it in their mind. So that's a couple of things that we use. This is another one. In the room that I interview students with, we put up this collage. I put the little place we got it because I figured somebody was going to ask me and then I was going to have to remember. So this is a fairly, you can see the chairs there. It's a fairly large collage of our kids. And one of the things you really want to do is soften your school as they're looking at it. You want kids in your school. You don't want, we have a lot of classical ornaments around, little columns and things like that. And that's good. But you really want the dominant thing for parents to see in your school as kids. And so one of the things that we did with this mural was, this is the room we interview parents in. It's the room where parents are brought when they first come to the school. And parents, the one thing they can't see in your classroom is all the extracurricular stuff. So if you notice, the types of things that are depicted in this are our orchestra, our soccer teams, our choirs, our mock trial teams, things like that. So it's a good conversation starter. Parents see, remember what I said, one of the values parents have in secondary is the extracurricular. This just speaks to them that you are an extra, you have extracurriculars. And you don't have to, do a song and dance for them. It just, you're sitting there and they're looking at it and they just see it. Move on to the next slide here. So this is the other thing that I was saying, be different. What I mean by this is show your differences to your parents on a regular basis. And there's a few ideas here, and I'm sure some of you will have more. The Socratic method, I've had parents that have had kids in our school for 3 or 4 years who are trying to decide whether they want to go stay there, and I encourage him to go just sit in a classroom. They go up there and they come back down and they're so on fire they want to join in on the class. And they just love it. And I'm surprised you've never seen this, You've been here 5 years, you've never actually seen what goes on in the school, and they don't. So you've got to build an invitation. You've got to create an invitation for parents. It's, easy for us as administrators of schools to just assume that, sure, we'd love to have you come look. You've really got to put that out there and encourage them to come in. And you got to control that to some extent. Obviously, if it gets out of hand, you've got so much distraction going on in your classroom, you can't get teaching done. But whatever works for you, create some kind of an opportunity, particularly in the upper school, particularly around Socratic discussions, if you use those at your school, which I hope you do if you're a classical school. The formal visitation program, I just kind of mentioned that. Exordiums, I didn't know what to call these. Some people call them chapels, but for us they're not chapels. So I'm going to describe what we do for exordiums. So one of your greatest assets is all those little kids you have running around have grandparents and parents. And those, that's the obvious. Those grandparents and parents are not going to come to chapel. But they will come to what this thing we call exordium. You can call it whatever you want. But basically what we do is on Wednesday mornings at 8 in the morning, so it's right when they're dropping off so they can come on in, we do an assembly every other Wednesday where two classes, and it can be any two. Sometimes it's second and fourth grade. Sometimes it's two second grades. They get up and they do recitation of whatever they've learned. And there's actions usually with it. And it serves a great academic purpose because your kids will learn the chants a lot better if they have to perform them. And so they'll do the Great Men of the Middle Ages, or they'll do the periodic chart song, or they'll do 1 Corinthians 13, recite the whole thing, or they'll do the bells. It's a carol? Anyway. These poems that they recite, we come in singing a hymn, so the kids line up in the hallways and enter singing a hymn. So the parents are impressed already because the kids are singing these from memory. We do a hymn of the week, or hymn of the month, excuse me. So by the exordium, we sing the same hymn for two successive exordiums in the same month. And by the second one, at least, they really know it well and they sing out. They come in, they sit down, it's orderly. Our vice principal, who's quite a guy, gets up and does some proverbs. This is great for, because, you know, remember, why are these grandparents and parents here? They want to see their little Johnny perform. But they're getting messages from us the entire time they're there. And he'll get up and he will, our vice principal, and he does Bill's Proverbs. His name's Bill, and so that's all we've been able to call them. But basically, he takes Bible ideas, leave it, and then they respond back, better than you found it. I wish I could recite some of these. I should have been there more, I guess. But he has some of them. There's actions where, you know, the end of one I remember is, "No excuses, sir," and they all stand up and salute him, you know. And it's all in fun. It's kind of a back and forth, and it's really fun, and the kids enjoy it, and it gets them some moral kind of real solid training. And then when you see a kid leave a wrapper on the floor, you can recite the first three letters or the first three words, and then they recite the rest. So that call and response kind of thing, it's kind of like a liturgical activity, except it's done with energy and fun for the kids to really engage it. So that's, and then the exordium then moves in and they'll recite. In the older students, so once we get 7th through 12th, our exordiums are rhetorical. So we stop having them recite things, obviously, and they usually present material. They're either science lab presentations or they're speeches from this, that, or the other thing. If you saw Krista's speech yesterday, that was something she did at exordium a few months back. So that's the kind of thing that we do in the secondary. And parents still come out for those. So use your students to get the parents out. They will come for that. And then I had mentioned on their hosting lecture series, I'm not going to say a lot about that because I'm sure that you know there's two ways of doing that, poorly and well. And if you find good speakers and you do it, promote it well, you can get some value out of it. I found that most of the time lecture series don't go over real well, but if you're pretty creative with it, you might be able to make something work there. This is another thing. I'm a keep it simple kind of a guy. I came from the technology industry, and I'm kind of a rebel now because I don't like technology after having been soured on it for 15 years. At one point, I was working, you know, I worked at Microsoft on behalf of HP for a number of years, so I've been all over this stuff. One thing that I've learned is that there's hype and then there's reality, and email is reality. There's a lot of people with text messaging now. There's Twitter and all this stuff. But as far as alternative media goes, email is still pretty solid, especially if you're the headmaster of the school and it's coming from you. Because my parents, at least, I send one of these a week, and they're called headmaster's notes. And there's a formula that you have to pay careful attention to, because if you do it poorly, your parents will just hit delete very fast. So the first thing I do, the formula that works, is that there's a paragraph at the top of my headmaster's notes. Now, if you knew me or you watch me up here, brevity is not a strong suit for me. And so I've had to force it into a single paragraph or two paragraphs. In fact, I'm going to, right now, see if I can bring up, I knew somehow that wasn't going to work. So it's in the, there are several of these headmaster's notes on that website. And what they do is they start out talking about a current event. I pick something off, I can't remember what my example was here, but I think I was dealing, Chuck Colson did a break point on the situation with the girl who committed suicide over bullying. And so I connected with that in the first sentence. And then the second thing I do is make it personal. So once, you know, I want them to know I'm writing this from the heart. I'm not just writing philosophy out there. So the third thing is that I reference a lot of quotes and things that are going on in the world today, and I tie it all into classical education. One of the great things about classical education is it really relates to everything, right? It's not a stretch to tie everything from Gulf oil spills to the Easter Bunny into headmaster's notes. And that's what parents want to hear, is they want to know something that relates to them, not what Aristotle said. I always put that in later in the headmaster's notes, once I've related it to current events. And then I always tie up relating it to Christ, because I think that what parents need to see is current events, classical view, Christ, every time. And so we just work, it always ends up with some Christian truth and some, we land on Christ at the end. And then the gem, which is the reason I think most people really read these things, is that I start in then, I said, okay, and here's some happenings for the week. And so I'll just write, I just put a numbered list of things I've been working on this week. It may be as mundane as getting the sprinklers shut off so that kids can play there on Saturdays to, you know, going to the ACCS conference and needing their prayers for that or whatever. They like to know you personally, and it's hard for people to leave a school when they know you personally. It's easier when you're just a machine and a big face. And so this is a way that you can really develop personal relationships. So I'm not a very disciplined person. And, you know, I don't every Monday morning come in and have the same routine. So this is an extra effort for me to get this done every week. And I can't say that I'm completely spot on. But about every week or every 2 weeks, we get these things out. And I would really encourage this kind of continuous. And what it does is it trickle feeds. It's kind of like, you know, just dribbling truth into them a little bit at a time in a format they can read, that they don't have to, you know. Yeah, so anyway, bookstore, parent library. I went down to the furniture store, bought a hutch with a glass front on it and put some books in there, and then bought a little table and put some books on it and stuck it right where the parents couldn't miss it. And it is so surprising. There's like half of them are to be checked out. They have our little library card in the side. Half of them can be bought. And you just have to, you know, because where the library card thing is stuck on the inside. And it's surprising how many parents are there waiting for something. They pick this stuff up and look at it. And we go through a lot of books. A lot of parents end up buying the books. You just have to put it in front of them. It's like any of us. You know, you go into, I don't know what kind of Walmart, Target, whatever you have around here. And there's a reason why they put things on the end, what they're called the end cap displays of those stores. They know I can't remember the ratios from when I was into this business, but the NCAP ratios are like, I think, about three or four times the sales rates of things that are in the aisles. And so you want to get books in the hands of your parents, put them right where they can get to them, and make it easy. And so we do Recovering the Lost Tools, classical case for classical Christian education. There's a Norms and Nobility. It's kind of a hard book to get, but we found it to be popular. And then we do all of Doug's family series, because a lot of this is trying to let them know that classical education isn't just like a flavor of ice cream that you buy. It is a whole family system. You know, your families have to be engaged. So Future Men sells very well. We promote it quite a bit. Shepherding a Child's Heart. Trying to remember some of the others. I don't think I actually got the picture in there. But another one, we publish a book called The Discover Booklet. On the front page, it's a little pamphlet. You can buy these from Classical Academic Press, I think. But they say, you'll wish you could go back to school on the front. And we have those out there as well, so parents can just pick them up and take them and hopefully read them. And then in a related concept, I don't know, how many of y'all have gyms? Okay. If you're lucky enough to have a gym on your facility, that is another great marketing tool. Because somewhere near the main entrance to your gym, if it's inside, you can put a literature rack. Because every time you have a home and away game, you've got all these parents coming and going that are your parents and grandparents that may not otherwise see you. They've got to sit in that gym for a certain period of time waiting for things to get started. And if you can put up one of these literature racks, and we have these things called Insights, and they're just two or three page. They're actually all on our website, so if you wanted to see them, you scroll to the bottom of the page where all of the documents are that you'll see here, and you'll see the parent insights that we have up there. But they address, they're very much targeted, you know, they're not classical as much as, like, there's one called Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Book? I think it's a reprint of something R.C. Sproul Jr. wrote. We've got Chuck Colson on Classical Christian Education, a transcript of his Breakpoint that he did several years ago on it. We have these printed, there's black and white, you know, a little bit of design to them, but they just sit there in that rack. And that rack empties about every 3 weeks during the sport. I mean, we'll put in 50 of each, and there's eight slots in the rack. And we go through all of that in about every 3 weeks during the sport season, and then it dries off quite a little bit. So as you can tell, I miss no opportunity to try and move our parents that way. Yeah.
What kind of response have you had in people coming to ball games wanting up at the school because
I've always found it hard to tell, because it seems to me that everybody who comes in, when I ask them how they found out about the school, they have somebody's name. So-and-so told me. But I watch them when they take them out, and then they talk to each other. And then we had a speaker from Hillsdale at our school, and it was in that gym. And we attracted a bunch of – Hillsdale sent out a – this was 2 weeks ago, and they sent out their little promotion – and so we got a bunch of people that with silver hair that just showed up that we'd never seen before. And the rack cleared out, not completely, but, I mean, a lot of it left. And they were talking, you know. It's really hard to quantify how much of this is really effective. That's the point. Don't try and look for the one thing that's going to be effective. You know, it's kind of a shotgun blast. You got to keep the information out there, because we don't – it's not expensive to photocopy these things and stick them in the rack. At least not for us. So, and then this is the next one. How many of you all have a back to school night, or some kind of a once a year back to school night thing? Okay. Is that, how many of you get more than half of your parents there? Oh, good. More than three quarters? All right, good deal. Well, you're better than I am, so you should be teaching. You know, it's hard to get, we get about half our parents there. The thing I've found, though, is I always recommend Recovering the Lost Tools of Learning. And, you know, being a reader a bit myself, my nightstand is so full of books that are half read, I'm embarrassed. But the thing is that what I found was that short articles have a better effect. You can actually get people to read them. So we published this thing called nightstand articles. So I just kind of encourage parents. I give it out at that. We have it available in the rack as well, but I give it out at back to school night and say I want, and I usually speak on one of the articles that is in it. And there's about 33 articles in it. All of it is online in that packet that you'll be downloading if you want it. So sometimes I'm asked about copyright restrictions on it. We did clear it with a patent attorney we have, that because we're an educational institution, we're carefully using segments of things, not all of the thing, and we're not selling it. You can't buy it from us. It's just a educational use. We're educating parents. So it falls under the, we believe at least, that it falls under the fair use. But you'll have to make that determination on your own. Most of it isn't stuff people would worry about the copyright on, but I'll show you the index of it here. Remember I told you it was tiny. So that first one, iron sharpening iron. I order these in order of most accessible to parents to the least accessible to parents. So iron sharpening iron is a great Socratic. It ended up on my desk one day. One of my teachers stuck one of those little tiny post-it notes on it that said, the best article on classical education I've ever read. And knowing the teacher, I thought, that's a bit too much superlative for her normally. So I actually read it, which isn't usual. And it was. It was amazing. He starts out talking about how he got through school, jumping through hoops, and how, you know, he just did whatever he had, the least he could do to get through. Does anybody in here know who Jeff Baldwin is? Okay, a couple. He has the website thegreatbooks.com. We've had him train at our school. He is a good trainer in Socratic method. He's a great guy. He works for Worldview Academy. And this is a great article from him. Talk about superlatives, lots of greats there. But The War of the Great Books, this is an article on what the great books are. The Long War Between Materialism and Christianity, that's a piece out of a small segment out of Total Truth. One thing I found with this is that some parents, once they start reading one of these, they want to read the whole book. So it's really good to, you know, get, these are all 2 or 3 page things. Screwtape proposes a toast. I put this one in here because this is how I got into classical education. Back in 92, I was reading Screwtape letters. I didn't know much about C.S. Lewis. I was a youth group guy. I actually worked for HP at the time, but I was my ministry was at church working with youth groups. I was frustrated a little bit by the depth or lack thereof in the students. And so I picked up, I was just reading just whatever, and I picked up the Screwtape letters, and it happened to be that the edition that I had this Screwtape proposes a toast in the back of it. How many of you have read that? Okay, good, yeah. Well, you know, it's a great, I mean, I read this and I went, you know, this is where I was in 92. I thought C.S. Lewis died. Is he alive or did he die? Because I couldn't believe he could know what was going to happen to the public school systems that well. And then when I looked it up and found out he died in 63, was it November 20th or something? Now I know. But the thought occurred to me, boy, even in 63 this was hard to know. Well, this essay is dated into the early 50s or late 40s. And so I make that point. This isn't annotated. If you notice, my index is or my table of contents is annotated. I annotate everything that I have parent. I even annotate our children's book reading list because they need to understand why they're reading and why they're doing. It's part of the education program for your parents. And so you can see the annotations that are on here from me. So that got me into it originally. And then The Lost Tools of Learning, of course, that needs no introduction. Christian Teens, this was just a Wall Street Journal article on how Christians aren't, the worldview of Christians isn't really any different than the worldview of the world. And so I, you know, it's great to throw in a simple newspaper article once in a while. Over-mothered and under-fathered. I don't know. I may have something some of you wrote in here. If I did, thank you. Let's see, essential Christian. Oh, the other one. Oh, the Father Blakey states the issue. This is a great. If you guys, you really want to download this and look at it. This is an article from the New Republic in about 1914, I think. And Catholic priest in New York, it writes into the New Republic, or he's dealing with the issue of being able to run orphanages without the interference of the state. And the New Republic, of course, the progressive Deweyan sort of publication, says we can't trust parents. It goes through a long litany, but at the end it says you cannot trust parents with the education of their children because they'll indoctrinate them. And it will, we need to take that over as the state, and we need to own that territory. And so it's like an admission by our adversaries of what they're doing. And so it's a great article. Then there's a few others there. One other that I refer a lot to is Clement of Alexandria on Classical Christian Education. This is a great article on Jesus the Great Teacher. And anyway, I'll move on, but you can kind of see what those, what that idea is. Discipleship is the next one. This is a hard one for me. I'm a busy guy. I'm sure you all are as well. But in our town, if I don't disciple people, I don't get new board members because we don't have people who understand classical education growing on trees in Boise. So we have to build them. And to do that, it takes an ongoing exercise of developing relationships. What I'll do is when I do the family interviews, if you do a family interview, you all know, probably know what I'm talking about. It's the dad who sits there and is looking, you know, sitting back in his chair when you start telling him about the school, and by the end of the conversation, he's going like this, you know. When that happens, I star the top of the family interview form that we have, and then at the beginning of the school year, have the secretary go through and pull those, all the ones that have stars on them, and I call those guys and I get them in for, you know, coffee, all as a group, and try and get them to agree to, you know, I haven't done this recently, but I'm going to start it up again this year of getting them to start reading through books with me and things like that. So you can really try and be deliberate in your targeting, because this is what I'm saying. It's a long, ongoing process. It's not something you can do overnight. This comes out of course, working in the Christian form. Jesus had his three inner circle, you know, three in his inner circle, the 12 apostles, the 60 who went out, or 70 who went out as disciples, and the masses. And so that's really what we have to look, you know, both in teaching and in the way we bring our parents along. We need those inner circle people. We need the kind of the 12. So try and get those, and then get them to disciple other people. And that's takes some effort, but it's part of the overall plan. All right. Develop a value statement and package it. This is our view book, a couple of pages of it. The entire thing is online. When you're sending packets to people, a lot of people say, everybody uses information off the web, they don't use your packet. Well, that may be true, but they do get it, and they do open it, and they will look at it briefly. So your image is built by what they see initially, just in the way it's built. So be sure you put a little energy and money into these things, because they actually, even if they're not read, they make a difference in how you're perceived. If you get a little envelope from a Christian, you know, you went out and you sent requests for information out to five Christian schools and you got back five packets, and you know, most of them were an envelope with a bunch of photocopied pages stuffed in it and maybe a cheesy brochure thing that somebody did that looks like it was done, you know, by the Yellow Page Company or something. That means something. There's a message in that. How professional is this place? So you need to have something that has some gravity to it when they get it. Now, the truth of the matter is, every family that comes in this year to me got their information from my website. And so you really need to be sure your website's in good shape. That goes without saying, so I'm not mentioning much of it. One of the things that I'm surprised about is what the parents always tell me is that my website has more information on it than any of the other schools about things. And so do that. I mean, we're different. We're a lot different. So talk about how different you are. And, you know, you can use your imagination and how you want to do that. And then I talked here also about a value statement. The way you go about creating messages for your parents is you start with values. What is it that they value? If a parent values, we talked yesterday about what some of those values were. That one of the big ones was the integrated Christian worldview, or the integrated biblical worldview in all that we teach. We don't have a Bible class, that kind of message, right? Now, some of you may, but we don't, so that's what we say. That integrated Christian worldview value then needs to be packaged somehow into a message that your parents are going to understand. And too often what we do is we use jargon that we understand. And I do this, so I'm the pot calling the kettle black. I use words like trivium. I use words like worldview. I use words like words that they think they would know the meaning of, like teach your child to think. And they think they know the meaning of think, but then there's thinking and there's think, right? And so you have to really work on your messaging, and that takes some trial and error. So you've got to come up with some things that will, this is very much tied to the principle in Gregory's seven laws, that you got to start where the parents are and educate them. You got to get them to where you are. So you got to start with a language they understand, and you got to move them to your language. And to do that, you need messaging. And I didn't give you many examples of messaging here, just because I don't believe I did. Maybe I do have a few more, so I'll get through those. I'm going to go through. I'd forgotten that I continued this in the series, and I'm going to hit a few of the ways you would develop value this way. So, what did I do? Well, there it is. Overall desires in the grammar school. So I wanted to hit this real quick. For those of you who saw this yesterday, I did this survey, had about 350 respondents, 400 respondents, something like that. Some of you helped me. If you were a classical Christian school, I sent a request out, and you sent it on to your parents. If you did that, your data is probably in here.
So the orange and the blue are first priority, second priority, and it goes on down third, fourth. So you look at it, biblical character and training, first priority. Strong academics came out strong, Bible teaching and instruction, an environment free from negative cultural influences really didn't come out very well in this. Now remember, we're surveying classical Christian parents, so that actually didn't surprise me, because we don't want to shield our kids from the culture. We want them to interpret it, right? So some of this is self-fulfilling. But if you look at these values, this one, on academics, what do they mean by academic? I want academics that are rigorous and challenging for my child. That was the top answer. Are well-rounded and include music and art. So for K-6, music and art are a big deal. We see this tail off considerably in the secondary. They're more interested in AP classes and stuff like that. But in the primary, this is what's driving. Focus on thinking and reasoning rather than knowing and memorizing. So that's, for example, a way you can message it. We used that because it was language that we thought parents could understand. Focus on thinking and reasoning rather than knowing and memorizing. But this is K-6. So watch it if you're going to tell your K-6ers all we do is memorize stuff. Because that may be what the grammar phase is primarily about, but if that's how you message it, they aren't going to understand that you're talking about songs and things like that. They're going to be looking at
I'm not sure I want a bunch of memory work. All right, so overall desires for the high school. Here you see the integration of academic subjects in a biblical worldview being the top answer there. Biblical character. So the Christian stuff, Bible teaching and instruction, other than strong academics, it's all dealing with the Christian elements. So that helps us know where to focus it. So why did I put, I did it before this, but it's consistent with why I put take every thought captive to Christ over the entrance, right? You really want to make that your core message. We would anyway, because that's who we want to represent, but it really brings that out. And then Christian worldview. This is a tough one because it's very hard to get people to understand what it is, really. So one thing that we do is I have a few examples that I pull out of the classroom that I use with parents all the time. I'm going to give you one of them to show them how we integrate biblical worldview that I use all the time with parents. I observed it in a classroom 3 or 4 years ago. I use the same example every time, so I know it well. It involves, when a parent will ask me, what does that mean and why do you read these funny old books? I'll say, well, you've got to understand the reason we don't have a Bible class is because we integrate it. And they'll say, well, what do you mean by integration? Or maybe they won't, but I'm going to tell them anyway. And I go through the story of Agamemnon and Achilles. And I talk about when you read the Iliad, there's a story, and I always have to tell them what it says because nobody's actually read it. Agamemnon and Achilles, and then sooner or later they'll go, oh, that movie, Troy. Yeah, okay, that one. So I'll say, when we look at Achilles, what our students are looking for is what kind of man was he and what was the relationship between he and Agamemnon. And I say that there's a point in that story where Achilles is, his pride is hurt by the actions of Agamemnon, and he's upset with Agamemnon not giving him the glory. So he pulls his ships out to sea, and Agamemnon's men start to lose the battle. And I tell them that, then Agamemnon makes kind of a recompense, and they bring the ships back in, and they're back to sacking Troy, and all is well. But whatever you don't want to do, you don't want to assault the glory of Achilles in the Iliad. And then I say, what we do is then we move, this unit that we do goes to Samuel and deals with David and how when David was the heir apparent to the throne, he fled Saul to avoid and prove that he could have killed him, but that he wouldn't because he was honoring God in recognizing that the order of God's ordinance for Saul to be king until Saul died and then David to become king. It wasn't about David. It wasn't about what David wanted. It was about doing and being honorable to God. And so that kind of a concrete message, when you compare Achilles and Agamemnon to Saul and David, and you can show them that we compare and contrast these two things, parents go, oh, even if they've never heard of Agamemnon and Achilles, they suddenly understand what it means to compare and contrast, and suddenly literature means a little more to them. They thought literature was something you had to read that wasn't fun, and the fun stuff's all at the grocery store. So they begin to understand what we do. So come up with these anecdotal stories to tell parents about things you've seen in the classroom, and I encourage you to use the same one over and over again, because as long as they're different parents. The reason being, of course, you know the story well and you get good at telling it. And that's always a hard thing to do. Another thing we have an advantage of is, and these are cues, things that you can pull your parents in with, things you put on the walls that they'll ask questions about that then you can talk to them. It's like the table. Well, one of them for us was our name. When we renamed our school to the Ambrose School, everybody kept asking, who in the world is Ambrose? And is the man who baptized Augustine and an instrumental classical leader and a Christian and a bishop. He's a model of classical Christian education, and he's a great guy to talk about. So we have that whole thing, that whole entry point. So create these entry points for your parents on Christian worldview. One of the things on the Christian training, I do try and go through and highlight what particular classes are doing in my headmaster's notes. Just pick one. It doesn't really matter which one. What are they doing this month? Post your values clearly, and encourage teachers to keep parents aware of the Bible training. Because of the emphasis on Bible, a lot of your teachers think their job is to educate the students, and they'd be right. But they're also great. They're your first point of contact with your parents. So you get your, you know, when there's a memory work going on, when there's anything related to Christian worldview or the Bible in their class, you know, get that visible to the parents in the class. And then academics. This was one of the things that we tested. I don't know. Am I over time here? Does anybody know? I don't think so yet. We found in our market words like rigor, demanding, and discipline aren't very well received, even though that seems to be what they want. Things like structure, challenging, and achieve are better. So take care in the words you use to find words that are not loaded with meaning. Rigor to some parents means knuckle wrapping, you know, that kind of thing. So you kind of have to be careful of the words you use. A lot of times in our culture, measures are the best communication tools. I am a little cautious of this because you don't want to overstate the meanings of a lot of these measures, and you don't want to make test scores what you are. Obviously, in this business, we're not about test scores, but parents like to see them. If you look at our website, we have a measuring success section that talks about, it actually addresses the problems with testing more than it does testing itself, but we have some of our scores there. And then finally, shift parents to new values. So I just wanted to remind you, this is the last slide and kind of the end of the presentation. The goal here is not to give parents what they want. It's to get them a new set of values. And so this whole process is not to, you know, whisper words in their ears that are going to make them love you. It's to get them to change over time. We've got a good long sales cycle. If we pick up students in the first grade, we've got until the sixth or seventh grade. I mean, I would have died for that sales cycle when I worked for HP. It's a great deal to have somebody hang on for 6 years as a loyal customer that you get to talk to every single day. So you get this whole time period to shift their values. And if we squander that and don't use it, then at the end of 6 years, they're going to go find a junior high that they like or a high school that they like. If we're able to shift their values over the course of time, and these are the values that we try and shift them to: education for the free, kind of this independence of mind concept, clear thinking, writing, and speaking is an irreplaceable asset in the job market. Notice the job market there. Now, a lot of you might say, hey, what are you doing getting, you know, connecting jobs and classical education? That's kind of antithetical to our core. Yes, it is. I don't like it myself, but job market is a word they get. Thinking articulate students is the words I'm attaching to it. So that's the art of connecting where they are to where you want, where your values connect to where they are. And then eventually you can tell them that vocational training is for slaves, not for free men. Owning your faith versus knowing your faith, this is a big distinction we make a lot of. Worldviews are transferred, not taught. So if they think that they can teach their worldviews at home and not have the school support that, then they've got a time battle on their hands, because worldviews get transferred insidiously. And I work with this with our parents a lot, that it's not what they tell you outwardly. It's the preconceptions that they're working with in the classroom that drive worldview. A richer life, and then leadership. So that is the end of the prepared slides that I have. But I wanted to ask, have any of you got other ideas that you use to communicate with parents that don't fall into any of these categories? That you'd care to share with us? Yes?
Can we ask Kool-Aid drinking parents
Okay, so you've got, I'm going to repeat some of what you're saying for the recording here. So you've got parents who've drunk the Kool-Aid and are on board with you. So you have Sunday evening fireside chats, you involve food, always a good move. As a former Baptist, I really appreciate the food part. And then you use some of your discipled people to help bring others along. That's consistent with the discipling strategy. Yes? Yeah, that's a good one. That's basically using what you call soiree. I suppose it would be something like our protocol dinner. We use our senior thesis defense because it's a public defense for that as well. We invite the public to the defense as well as all of our other students are there. And so we have a lot of college professors who are actually invited on the rotating panel, and that spreads it a little bit. Yes. Right. So, well, there's probably a variety of flavors of that where you kind of develop social environments in which your students can perform. Because anytime a student's performing, you've got at least four adults that are probably going to come watch. And that's the grandparents, maybe on both sides, so that might be six adults, and their parents. So your students can carry your message better than you can. I think that's all the time we have. I think we could go till 9:30. So, yeah, I'm going to pop back to the first slide. Yep. Oh, thank you. Yeah, we're in the same boat, yeah.
That the fellowship seems to be lack, you know, because they're dropping off the kids, picking them up, and the parents are getting other parents, and that results in us having problems with getting people to help and volunteer, because if you do that, or volunteerism is more of a social
together kind of thing. Well, what we did is we created a PTF, and we have a real strong leadership in it, and we give them a lot of responsibility. So they do the back-to-school picnic, they do the end-of-year picnic, they do the Christmas program, which is a big thing. The Christmas program is like 1,000 people come to this thing. And what it's done is it pulls them. You got to be careful because it'll draw in so many parents, it'll start to burn some out, so you kind of have to watch there. But the PTF, we have a room. When we built our building, we built a fellowship. Well, we call it the Providence Room, and it doesn't look like a fellowship room. It looks like a coffee shop kind of, or a library coffee shop kind of a thing. And so they use that a lot. We have events in there that parents come. It's always open, and they actually sell coffee and stuff. So that's been part of what we try and... Yeah, the only thing I haven't been able to solve yet is parents say more of them would use it if they could get wireless, but I don't allow open wireless on our campus for obvious reasons. Yeah. So I haven't figured out a solution to that, but that's going to work. Thank you.